I'm Indy Todd. Welcome to The Point. Today we talk gardening with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
All right, so last month we mentioned the impact our harsh winter had on some of our perennial favorites. Now we've had some time to actually survey our gardens and see how bad the damage really is.
There is some damage out there, particularly with hydrangeas. As I walk around my yard, I got on sort of a hydrangea kick the past several years, and most of them currently look like a collection of sticks. Some that I thought were guaranteed to be tried and true hardy, they're getting growth at the base, but the stems themselves are dead.
Yeah. No, I have the same exact problem. I have one of those French lace cap hydrangeas. Mm-hmm. That one's all leafed out. All of my other ones, every single one of them, the same thing. It just has some green at the base,
yep,
and everything else looks dead. So do we cut off all those sticks then? What do we do?
Well, I'm still waiting. I mean, I'm always holding out hope that there might be some life in those sticks, although I suspect what I'm going to have to do is a lot of pruning. I have one, Lady in Red, which is a lace cap and a gorgeous hydrangea at that, that is fully leafed out all up and down the stems. I know I'm going to get blooms on her. She's just lovely. But the rest of my multitude of hydrangeas are going to see a lot of pruning done.
So do you suggest we wait a little bit then before we cut back all those
Depends
sticks?
On how impatient you are. Mm-hmm. I'm almost reaching the point now. It's mid-May. We've had a couple of really warm days, not yesterday or today, mm-hmm, but you know, Sunday and Monday were just wonderful.
Beautiful.
And I was amazed at all it took was 2 days and suddenly, boom, everything is leafing out. It's really nice, but not the hydrangeas. So that indicates to me that they're probably not going to.
So, so we should cut them down to where the green is.
Correct.
And we probably will not see any blooms then this year.
I think on most of our hydrangeas, and we're talking about the blue hydrangeas, not your paniculatas, the white ones that bloom in summer. The blue hydrangeas are pretty much not going to be blooming this year, except for the ones that are the so-called rebloomers that bloom on new wood as well as old wood. Endless Summer was one of the first of those to come out. Frankly, I think it's kind of a wimpy plant. I got real excited about it when it hit the market and, of course, planted it. And each year I'm going, well, you know, it's okay. And yeah, it will bloom on new wood, but it's does not really go, wow, look at that.
Another, I was telling you before we went on the air, I had this enormous rose bush that has been there for at least 15 years, and it died. So I just this last weekend, you know, took it all out, which I'm looking at as an opportunity because, you
That's
know,
right.
those thorns are pretty, you know,
nasty.
They jab me all the time. So I thought, okay, we'll rip that out of there. But what I'm worried about is next to it is my crepe myrtle.
Oh.
And I'm hoping, because, you know, they don't really show any life for a little while. They're sort of late to show.
Extremely late.
Yeah,
yes.
So I'm not touching that baby just yet. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it made it through the winter.
Well, I have a crepe myrtle that I planted probably in 96 or 97. And you're correct. It is one of the last things to leaf out. And then it doesn't bloom until almost September. And I hadn't even thought about that. I will have to keep an eye on that.
Yeah, so that's one we don't want to pull out prematurely.
No. I mean, if you're looking at your hydrangeas now, sure, get out the pruners and the loppers and take out. You should be taking out any, if it's a well-established plant, the normal routine is to go out in spring and take out several of the oldest canes right down to the ground, just so it promotes new growth from the base. Well, we're getting the new growth from the base this year, whether we want it or not. But take out the dead stuff, clean it up, and enjoy it for its foliage. Yeah. It's a nice green plant, but don't get your heart set on a lot of blossoms.
So as we're going through the gardens and we're looking at what appears to be dead, how do we know when it's dead and when it might come back, when it just needs a little TLC?
I'm always reminded of the Monty Python skit, The Dead Parrot, if you've ever seen that, where it's really dead. I wait. I'm never anxious to write something totally off. For woody plants, when I'm starting to get a little nudgy about it, I will actually go out and very carefully nick a little bit of the bark, which is, I'm creating a wound. I know you really don't want to be doing that, but sometimes you just have to know. Mm-hmm. And if it's green under the bark, the chances are that it's just really slow to come to life in the spring. If it's brown under the bark, well, yank it out. Right. It's dead.
And sometimes it can be deceiving. I know I had a butterfly bush. This was many years back now. And I was sure it was dead. I planted another one right next to it. And wouldn't you know, that sucker bloomed a little while later, so I had to move the one to another spot.
Well, I put in 2 years ago a gorgeous variegated butterfly bush. Its foliage is bright gold and green.
Ooh, that sounds
it's
pretty.
And I can't remember the name of it because I wanted to get another one because I thought it was dead. And I saw the other day teeny, teeny, tiny little leaves are sprouting out. So I was glad that I didn't just yank it. I also have a dwarf butterfly bush that, again, was very, very slow. If you pruned them last fall, they may be dead because they like to keep their wood over the winter. And you prune them when you see new growth in spring. So,
right. We're talking with Roberta Clark. If you have a garden question or story for us, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. Since we're talking butterfly bushes, that was going to be a question I asked you. So now would be the time as it's starting.
Yes.
This is when you, and how far back do you prune it?
I take mine pretty far back. I mean, as you know, a butterfly bush will grow 12, 16 feet and can be a massive plant, which will, you know, anything that you have next to it will be overshadowed. I take mine back to about 18 inches every year. So I'm pretty ruthless when pruning. And this is my one old standard butterfly bush. It's rock solid, hardy. It will leaf out regardless of the winter. And it did leaf out quite early this year. And I pruned it way, way, way back. And it will still get to be about 8 to 10 feet tall.
Yeah, I have a big one like that, too. Yeah. And we did trim that back. I have another one, though, that I don't really... I want to keep it sort of thin. So mm-hmm. I just trim all the new stuff and let the, you know, a few of the taller
yep.
branches stay.
Yep. Yep.
So you can keep them in control if you want
can.
To.
You can. And I think it's important if you plant in one of the big ones and you have surrounding perennials or shrubs, you really need to be kind of ruthless with it and prune it right back.
Right. And now would be the time as we're seeing
yes.
the forsythia turn to the leaves. This is when we trim the forsythia.
Forsythia, prune them now. Lilac, they're just starting to bloom, so you want to wait on that. But when they start to fade, then you would go in. So the general rule of thumb, any spring flowering shrub, prune it right after it blooms. Mm-hmm. What I did this year, I'm having some work done on my house, and also I'd created so much shade that with a lot of my flowering shrubs, I decided they needed renovation. So I didn't wait for them to leaf out and bloom. I just went out there, and I have a big weigelia that mm-hmm. cut way back, a nine bark that cut way back. I cut several of my lilacs right back. And they won't bloom this year, but they'll put out all new wood and look lovely next year.
Now, is it true that if you trim, you know, the flowers, you know, the obviously you're not going to pick all of those flowers, but if you trim them back after they die, that you'll have more flowers next year, or does that really matter?
I'm not sure that really matters.
You hear that, but you never
yeah.
know if that's true
yeah.
or not. And then, of course, there's the boomerang lilacs, which I planted last year, so they'll bloom twice.
They do. I have one of those, and right now it's loaded with buds. Last year, I only got one set of bloom on it. Apparently, after it blooms, you prune out the dead flowers, mm. fertilize it, and then you get
a second bloom.
So I will do that.
I will do that, too. All right.
I vow I will do that this year.
Deb is calling from Woods Hole. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning. I'm glad to hear you talking about all these dead things. And unfortunately, I have a couple of my favorite old lilacs in the backyard that have, I would say, 95% of two bushes have died.
Oh, dear.
And I'm wondering, I'm looking out the window now and I see, you know, a couple live shoots. Do I get rid of 99% of the plant and hope the other shoots take over? I mean, they're old plants, and they've been very reliable. I'm not sure what to
do. Yeah, I would certainly go out there and take out all the deadwood. And if that's 95%, normally we don't want to take all that much out. But if it's dead, then yes, you have to take it out. And I would probably, you might want to get the soil tested for the pH.
Okay.
Lilacs like a sweet soil. They'll do testing at the Extension Service for, I think it's a $2 fee, and let you know whether you need to lime the area or not. So prune them back.
It's funny because two of them didn't make it, but everything else in the lilac hedge looks fine. It's just these two that I've always relied on.
Are they more exposed than the others?
A little bit, and one is definitely the oldest.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's been here decades in the yard, and every year part of it
dies,
fades away, and
yeah.
The other part comes back, but this year it really has barely made it.
Yeah. Well, you know, we like to think of plants as being eternal, but
sometimes
plants do actually have a lifespan. It may be longer than ours, but there is a lifespan to them, and that which is one reason why we want to prune our shrubs on a regular basis, because it forces the plant to put out new growth, which is obviously younger, and it rejuvenates the plant. So, yeah, I would take out all the dead stuff, lime it if it needs it, fertilize it, and I think you'll see new growth coming, and it should look much better within a few years.
Yeah. Okay, I do have one more question.
Sure.
About the healthy lilacs. I've heard when you prune them to promote growth, you don't just like top it off. Choose a major branch from the bottom and get rid of it. Is that true?
That is correct. For well-established shrubs that are in good health, basically you want to take out some of the oldest stems, and they'll be the biggest ones, right down at the base. And the rule of thumb is, for a healthy shrub, generally no more than a third of the oldest shrubs. And that pushes out new growth, and you have a healthy shrub for many years.
Yeah.
Deb, right, and with lilac, that would be something I do after the blooms.
That's correct. Yeah. Yep.
Deb, thanks. Good luck with the lilacs. Now, that's so sad when you have something for so long and then it's
Yes.
Now, and there's the different colors now. I last year saw a pale yellow lilac.
There is a pale yellow lilac.
It was gorgeous.
It is stunning. I don't have it.
I don't either, because I had no place to put it, but it was really gorgeous. And it seems to me that the white lilacs are a little more fragrant than the purple.
Mine, the one that I've taken back severely, actually I have two big ones, which both got cut back severely. One, which I can't remember the name, is a double flowering white.
Ooh.
Oh, Miss Ellen Wilmot. It just came to me. beautiful, beautiful shrub. And the other one I got as a seedling at the Arnold Arboretum. I had no idea what it was. And it turns out to be a beautiful late blooming after all the other lilacs are done. It's big, beautiful, pink, fragrant blossom. So,
wow.
But that's also taken right down.
Yeah. All right, Sumner is giving us a call from the vineyard. Good morning, Sumner.
Hello.
Good morning.
I have a question about figs.
Yes.
I've been growing figs, at least one of them, for about 20 years.
In the ground or in pots?
In the ground, yep, out there in the ground, and they're looking pretty nothing's happening this year. And I've talked to everybody else I know on the island who's doing figs, and none of us have seen any growth coming out.
Yeah.
Do you have any wisdom to impart?
I had a big brown turkey fig that I grew in a pot, and it finally got to the point where I really couldn't lug the pot in and out of the basement. So I put it in the garden, and for 2 years, my brown turkey fig grew and gave me figs and was just beautiful. And Monday it got dug out and tossed in the compost because it's dead. So I was really disappointed by that. But this winter was they're marginally hardy in this area. I know here in Woods Hole, Jenny Junker had a huge fig.
She's shaking her hand like this. It's
mezzo.
Yeah, right.
She could pick figs out of her second story window. It was the
biggest
fig tree I've ever seen. And certainly on the vineyard where you're surrounded by water, you're marginally milder than the rest of the Cape. So if they were going to survive, that would be the area where I think they would. Mine, I'm in the middle of Marston's Mills, and it's dead as a doornail. But anytime something dies, it's an opportunity to try something new.
Yeah.
So
I've got about five really beautiful, healthy,
Yeah.
And not a chance that they'll come up from the roots?
Well, they might. So again,
I'm not going to touch them for
a while. I would certainly leave them. I was pretty sure this was dead. I dug out some of the major roots and did my little nick the bark to see if anything's green, and I kept going further down and further down, and it was all pretty dead. I do have...
Well, earlier in the spring, really earlier, I nicked it and I saw green.
That's encouraging.
Well, maybe it'll come back some. Call us next month and let us know what happens, because I'm going to be curious.
I sure will.
thanks for the call. Good luck. I'm hoping, keeping my fingers crossed, that works out for you. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. And Larry is calling from East Ham. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. Yes, I'm calling about plant row covers that Roberta has talked about before. We had some problems with pests with broccoli, particularly last year, and I had some broccoli and kale and Brussels sprouts sets in. I bought what I was told was row covers, but it's just a sheet of white material. I haven't even opened the package yet, but I'm really not sure how to deploy this in the garden, how to anchor it, or do you just rest it over the cut it and put it over the plants, and how do you anchor it in, and how... you just let it rest on top of the plant?
Well, I'm thrilled to hear that you're buying row cover, because I find it's a great product to use in the garden to protect against pests and to create a nice environment for your plants. And it's actually keeping the bunnies out of my cabbage as I speak. Yes, it looks like a big sheet of white pliable fabric. It does have to be anchored. I use a product called Earth Staples, and they look like giant metal staples. And you can, if you have sturdy plants, you can just, it's very lightweight. It can literally sit on top of the plants. You don't necessarily cut it to fit. You allow a lot of extra fabric. That way, as the plants grow, they literally lift the fabric up. But I use the staples to anchor it to the soil, and it works very well. I'm glad to hear that you've purchased it. I like to hear that.
Yeah, great. Larry, good luck
with
that.
Okay, thank you. We'll give it a try.
All right, thanks. Talia is calling from Provincetown. Good morning, Talia.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I planted some tulips for my mom about a year and a half ago, and last year they bloomed really nicely. And this year they just sent up leaves, and they haven't really sent up any flower stalks. So I'm wondering what I need to do, if I need to dig them up and fertilize them, or what would you recommend?
Yeah, tulips, you know, daffodils you can put in the ground and forget it, and they come up year after year after year, giving you an incredible display. Tulips are less reliably hardy in this area. You plant them, they bloom the following year, and then if you don't give them lots and lots of sun, don't cut the foliage down, they just generally don't come back as strong the following year. Sometimes you'll get some flowers. It sounds like you should be seeing buds by this time if they are going to bloom. I think that's just the nature of tulips. They're not as perennial as we're led to believe. They tend to be more annual. There are some of the species tulips, the smaller sort of wild-looking tulips, that do come back more reliably. But the general tulips that we plant are more for a spring display, and then they're gone.
Yeah. Okay, so I should probably just plant her some more.
In the fall, plant her some more, and she'll have a great display next spring. With these, did you cut back the foliage after they bloomed last year?
Yes.
Yeah, so you need to leave the foliage until it really looks horrible, you know, yellow and brown.
The foliage wasn't cut back, just the flower stalk.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, for all spring bulbs, you leave that foliage until it turns yellow, and then you can remove it. But that's how the bulb replenishes itself.
And you might try digging them up. I know I had some tulips that were planted before I even owned the house, and every time I see them come up, I pull them up and move them to another spot.
A better spot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they've come, they're beautiful.
That's wonderful.
And they were just leaves when I had moved them from some shady spots and things. So
they really are full sun plants.
Yeah. So I tried digging them up and planting them in a sunnier spot and see what happens.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks
You're
for
welcome.
Calling. All right, did we lose Greg? Do we have Greg from Chatham?
You have Frank from Chatham.
Oh, I have Frank from Chatham. All right, hi, Frank.
Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to follow up on your discussion on fig trees.
Yes.
I have a fig tree which I transplanted from back in New Jersey, and it's been providing figs every year for about 20-some years.
Fabulous.
And again, this year it's hardy. But I guess the key thing that you didn't mention is what you have to do in the winter. And I guess I'm old school, you know, have to cut it back and cover the root system with lots of mulch. And dirt, and then wrap it. I usually use burlap and top it off with some kind of plastic to keep the moisture out. And it's been pretty effective. Is that something that you can comment on?
That is certainly a good method. I know when I was going to school in Rhode Island, there is an area of Rhode Island with a lot of Italian families that grew lots of figs. And their method was to literally dig a trench in the fall next to the fig plant and carefully bend as much of the branches as possible over into the trench and then cover it with mulch and a tarp. And they're
fine when the fig tree is small, you know. But
when they're big, you can't do that.
You got to take something else.
Yeah.
Just want to suggest that because it's work, and I am Italian too.
So, Frank, your fig tree's looking good.
Yes, it's looking very good.
Oh, wow. Well, somebody's got one.
It's a slow start.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the fruit doesn't come in until
late
October. So
do you know what variety it is?
I really have no idea other than I know it's Smithley.
Yeah. The other thing is Chatham is, again, much like the Vineyard and Woods Hole, very, very mild because of the water. If it's like zero in Marston's Mills, it might be, you know, 25 in Chatham. So that might play a role in it as well. But yes, definitely if in the winter, particularly if it's a hard winter, I've seen people will take chicken wire and make fencing around their fig trees and then fill the chicken wire with leaves and put burlap around the outside. So yes, you can protect it. You can go to the effort to do that, and you better your chances that it will survive.
Yeah. Frank's thanks for calling. Appreciate that.
Well, you're quite welcome. Enjoying the program.
Thanks.
Thank you.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We got an email that says, do you have a favorite variety of high bush blueberry? What size plant do you recommend purchasing, and how long until they begin to produce?
Wow. I planted in 1989 8 blueberry bushes at the fairgrounds, and I think every one of them ended up being my favorite. I had early, I had mid-season, and I had late, and they were fabulous. And if you can still find these, there are newer varieties, but I'm not familiar with them, but these were tried and true. One is Blue Crop, one is Blue Ray, another one is Bluetta. There's one called Coville. Wonderful varieties. If you prune them fairly hard each spring, they'll put out new growth, but they'll also have big berries. That's the trick. Mm. They like full sun, a soil that is well amended with organic material. They like the soil to be on the acid side, and it needs to be kept moist. I'm in the process now of preparing an area because I miss the blueberries. I've been retired from the fairgrounds and the extension service for my third year, and I miss those blueberries. So I'm going to put 3 bushes in, and I need to get on them.
So, and how long till they start to produce then?
Generally, you don't. The first year, you pick off all the blossoms, and you should do that the second year as well. And by the third year, you can have a small crop. And after that, they're well established on their roots, and you can pick a regular normal crop. I buy my plants small, maybe a 2-gallon container. I don't think I would put in anything bigger than that. I saw some at a nursery the other day. They're, obviously, they came from down south. They already have berries on them. And if I purchased those, the first thing I would do would be to strip off the berries, because you want the energy to go into becoming established on a good, strong root system.
Good point. Barbara is calling from Hyannis. Hi, Barbara.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. I would like to know why my two beautiful large rhododendrons have died. They look dead. They're completely dead. There's no leaves on them, and I just can't understand why, because I've had them since, like, 1991.
Wow.
Oh, it's very sad.
Yeah, you know, sometimes these things happen. I have a dear friend who had an absolutely gorgeous star magnolia. Her husband gave it to her on their 40th wedding anniversary, and now they're heading on to 56 years, so it's been in the ground, well-established for quite some time, dead as a doornail this spring. Are these in an exposed location?
They are, like, they face north.
They face north. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be. Sometimes when we have years with a lot of snow cover, you'd think it acts as an insulating mulch, and to an extent it does, but you also get sunlight reflected off the snow that dehydrates the foliage. So
it wouldn't be some kind of bug that would...
Well, it could also be maybe there were voles. I frequently see voles. That's like a mole, only it starts with a V. And they like to chew bark in the winter. So if you go out and look down at the base of the plant to see if there's evidence that perhaps the bark was gnawed, maybe the shrubs were girdled. I've seen them kill creeping junipers by that. Perfectly healthy trees in the fall, dead as a doornail in spring.
And of course, with all the snow, the voles were having a
field day
because the predators couldn't see them. So yeah,
Well protected. Yeah. So you might check for that. It could be a combination of winter damage, vole activity, possibly just their old plants, and this was their time to go.
Yeah.
Would a euonymus be a good plant to put there, or I'd like to replace it with something, but I'm not sure.
I hesitate to plant euonymus because they, after a few years, become infested with euonymus scale. And it can kill them over time. So I would go to your favorite garden center and talk to the nursery people and see what they would suggest as a good replacement.
I think I will.
All right.
Great. Thanks, Barbara.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the phone call.
Okay, bye.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. A lot of people... looking at those tomatoes to put in the ground. I know you usually advise us to wait until Memorial Day weekend, but that's coming up really quickly.
Soon, you know, folklore, which sometimes has some kind of roots in reality, but folklore says after the full moon in May, you know, you can put your tender stuff out. I still keep an ear to the weather report, and if I do put stuff out, the full moon, I think, is tonight or last night. It's right about now. So if you put something out this weekend, you know, it might be fine. The key with tomatoes is we may not have a frost that kills them, but they don't like cold temperature. They will just sit there, and if it's really chilly, they'll turn purple. So I'm not sure you really gain a lot by putting them out early, unless you're using a row cover or a sun tunnel. I've grown them with sun tunnels, clear plastic, ventilated plastic that I use aluminum hoops to support, and that acts like a little greenhouse out in your garden. So certainly if you're using that, yes, by all means, get them right in the ground.
Right. And then, of course, as when we plant them, looking ahead to preventing problems, what do we do?
Well, again, I always like to recommend having your soil tested where tomatoes are being grown. If you're low in calcium in the soil, you can run into problems with blossom end rot. So you might want to have your soil tested just to preclude that happening. As they grow, I start to remove the lower leaves, and eventually, when the plants are maybe 2 to 3 feet tall, you know, the bottom 12 inches are clear of foliage. This allows good air circulation at the base. If it's wet, and even if it's not wet, we always tend to run into problems with early blight, and for a few years, we were having problems with late blight. There are a number of really good biological fungicides that will help prevent these diseases, but the key word there is prevent. Mm-hmm. It does not, none of them really work well on a disease that's already taken a hold of a plant. So if you go to a garden center and look at what they have for biological fungicides, once your tomatoes are in the ground, you might start treating them every 7 days or whatever the time interval suggested on the label is, particularly if it's wet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's very important to prevent the disease because you can't cure it.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Mary is calling from Mashpee. Good morning, Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, great. Okay, so I have been on the Cape since October 2011. Before I moved here, I used to be able to buy an incredibly gorgeous little daisy called Felicia amyloides or blue marguerites. I used to get them from Logies. Occasionally Mahoney's in Winchester had them, and then I used to get them on the North Shore at an old nursery that's no longer around. I really want some of those so badly here, and I can't find them. Nobody seems to have them. There's a greenhouse called Peppers or something like Peppers that's got them way out in Missouri, I think they are, but they don't get such a good rating by some of the people who call in or who write about them.
Right.
I didn't necessarily want to deal with that. I had read that they like the soil of Cape Cod. They're from South Africa. Somebody told me that there might be a greenhouse on either Martha's Vineyard or Nantucket that could possibly have them, but I guess I'd have to go out there and get some of them.
Yeah, that's a long boat ride for...
I mean, I used to be able to get them. I like to put them in a little pot, and I've actually had them winter over in the pot because they're a tender perennial. I've had them... We have a house in Princeton, Mass., and I would stick them in a northwest window, which is crazy, and they would bloom in the winter occasionally. So,
nice.
However, those are gone.
Mary, have you actually gone to maybe some of the garden centers and asked them if they could get them for you?
Yes, I did. I went to one in Mashpee here.
Yeah.
And
then they said no.
Was looking last year, and I just put my name on the list again. And I'm supposed to call Mahoney's in Falmouth this week to see if they got any, but I'm thinking maybe the growers just aren't doing them for some reason, and I wondered if you had heard of them.
Well, it's a lovely little flower. It is tender, so in the ground it generally won't survive from year to year. I don't know. A lot of the annuals seem to... There's a whole push in horticulture for the past, I'm going to say, decade to brand lines of plants, and Proven Winners seems to be the brand that is predominant. You find Proven Winners at every garden center, and I'm not sure if they've actually developed a line of this little plant or not. Your best bet would be to look at some of the specialty nurseries as well. There are several that are smaller, not the big chain nurseries, that may have these or may be able to buy them in for you. What town do you live in?
I'm in Mashpee.
You're in Mashpee.
Yeah.
You know, you could check, I'm sure you've checked Mahoney's. You could check Country Garden. You could check M.A. Soares. You could check Brick Hill Nursery.
Oh, wait a second. I did Soares. That's where my name is.
Okay.
And Country Garden, and what is the other one you named?
Country Garden is in Hyannis.
Yeah.
And Brick Kiln Nursery is in Falmouth.
Oh, Brick Kiln. Yes, I should go there. Yeah. I'll be in Falmouth today.
there you go.
Well, good luck, Mary. We hope that works out for you.
Oh, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
I love your program. I just discovered it this morning.
Oh, good.
I'm going
Great.
To do a regular. When do you broadcast?
We're here 5 days a week, but Roberta's on once a month. So we
once a month.
But thanks for calling.
Thank you.
866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. We'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We're talking with horticulturist and entomologist Roberta Clark. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Candy is calling from Chilmark. Hi, Candy.
Hi. I'm a fairy, so my service may be a little sketchy on my cell phone.
Okay.
But I'm calling because I have a pair of Japanese Andromeda that I've had for at least 20 years, and one of them in particular is looking really anemic. It's not producing, you know, good blossoms. The other one is in full bloom right now. It really looks like it's on its last legs, and I'm wondering if you have any suggestions.
Have you noticed it looking anemic a little bit more and more each year?
Over last year and this year. Before that, they were, you know, both sort of on a par.
Okay.
And doing really well. But I started to think last year, I think I need to have somebody look at this. And then, of course, I got lazy about it and didn't do anything. And now, you know, it's definitely, I would say it's worse. It's declining.
Okay. Do you know if it's been infested with Andromeda lace bug? This is a real pest problem of Japanese Andromedas, particularly those that are growing in a really sunny area. And it's a small insect that, it's a sucking insect. It lives on the undersurface of the leaf, not the top of the leaf. And they literally suck the contents of the cells out. And so you get these little tiny yellow speckles on the leaf that coalesce, and the whole leaf ends up looking rather anemic. That's one possibility.
Okay.
The other possibility is it's just an old plant. Perhaps, are you on town water?
No.
No, so you're on well water. All right. Check the pH. They do like an acidic soil. There might be some changes in soil pH that's causing it. If all else fails, I would take some samples to the County Extension Service office in Barnstable and have the master gardeners take a look at it, and perhaps they can come up with a solution.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Have a relatively short lifespan?
Well, I've seen them pretty old. You know, they were planted in our grandparents' day, and some of those plants are still alive. They're not looking too good, but they're still alive. So
that was my impression, that they can be very long-lived.
It is, but okay. They don't necessarily look fabulous.
Right. All right, Candy, thanks for the call. We have a couple of emails. Where is the place for soil testing again?
It's Cape Cod Cooperative Extension, where I worked for 32 years. So, and it's located in the bottom floor of the Deeds and Probate Building in Barnstable Village.
Right. And Sue says, can you give us a winter moth caterpillar update?
Yes, they have hatched. They started hatching about a week and a half to 2 weeks ago. I'm not seeing tons of them in my area, although when I walked the dogs this morning, now that the oaks are leafing out, there's this one area where the street is bordered by very low-hanging limbs of oak trees, and I took a good look at the foliage, and indeed a fair amount of it is webbed together, and I know inside that webbing are little winter moth caterpillars. So they're here. We generally don't take a lot of notice of them until we start seeing a lot of damage. If you saw tons of moths flying around last fall, there's a good chance you have a lot of them this year. I did not have a lot of moths last fall, and indeed my apple tree, which is usually my indicator, is fine right now. No holes in the leaves at all. The other thing to be on the lookout for is gypsy moth caterpillars usually hatch when the shad bush is in bloom, and it's blooming right now. So again, over the years, the populations of gypsy moths have really declined, but there are always some of them out there. So that's another caterpillar to watch for at this point.
And what do you do about them?
I like to use spinosad. Any product that contains spinosad works really, really well on any caterpillars or other soft-bodied pests.
All right. Tomar's calling from Vineyard Haven. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have had moles and voles and wondered what you thought about that. I used nematodes last year, and I think that was a pretty good solution, but I don't know when the proper time to use them is and if that's the best solution.
What were you using the nematodes for?
They were infecting the things that the moles and voles eat.
The grubs, okay.
The grubs, yes.
I'm not a huge proponent of using nematodes simply because I think there is a lot of questions about when to use them, when you buy them, how are they stored, are they viable because they are a living organism. Mm-hmm. I don't really do a lot about moles, even though they cause ridges in the soil. The moles are not eating plants. It's the voles that are the problem because they are eating insects.
Yeah.
Or they are eating plants, rather. And I've used old-fashioned mouse traps and had great success with those, baited with a piece of raw potato. But if you have wildlife in your area, foxes, cats,
birds, raptors,
you know, generally when the population gets out of hand, the natural predators eventually bring it down again. So I sometimes just let nature take its course that way. I'm having a real issue with rabbits, and I wish nature would hurry up and take its course. But
we've had a problem with the moles. Our lawn by August starts to look like a road map.
Oh boy,
covered with all over.
I don't know.
The nematodes were successful, but I don't know when to order them. And they come. I've gotten them from Gardens Alive, where they require you that you will be there to get them, and it has to be during the week because they send them right out and they
right.
have to be alive.
Yeah. Right. They are a living organism, and I respect Gardens Alive for informing their customers that, you know, that is the way it has to be. Otherwise, the product will not work. So, you know, I would contact them and ask them what they feel is the best time for your particular area, mm-hmm. and I think they'll give you some good information.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh.
Aside from this or mouse traps?
I have no other solution.
Okay, the nematodes work very well, but it was required that they be watered at least twice a day.
That's
they had
correct.
To be kept wet for like at least a week or
That's
two.
Correct.
So it was a big job.
They're not easy to use.
Tamar, good luck. Thanks for the call. Jerry is calling from Harwichport. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning, Roberta.
Good morning.
And Mindy.
Good morning.
I have a quince question.
Okay.
I love my quinces, but they don't like me. I prune them in the spring after they bloom. I've tried pruning them in the fall, and all the blooms are still at the base. I see these 6-foot-high, beautiful coral quinces, and I don't know how they get there.
That's very interesting. I have one that I put in a few years ago, and I also prune it back after it blooms simply because it's in the wrong spot, and I don't want it to get too big. But the blooms tend to concentrate on the older wood, it seems. So it may be you would have to leave some of the wood to become older so it will bloom the next year.
And bigger and
correct.
To a better spot.
Okay. That's correct.
Oh, I'm with you, Jerry. My grandmother had a quince bush in her, and she made the best quince jam.
Gorgeous. They're kind of standalone. They're like 8 feet tall, and they're covered with blooms, top to bottom.
Yeah. And they're thorny. That's the other thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing, right. Jerry, thanks for the call. One of the things, too, we should probably be thinking about is our bees and butterflies and what impact we have on the chemicals or things that we use in the yard. Because the local pollinators, like every year I see fewer and fewer.
Well, I've seen bumblebees, I've seen carpenter bees, I've seen other solitary bees. I have not seen a lot of honeybees. And in talking to my friends who are beekeepers, most of the hives that are maintained on the Cape by hobby beekeepers did not survive the winter. Most of the bees just bit the dust. Mm-hmm. I know just last week, a huge, huge shipment of bees came into the Cape and they're being distributed to beekeepers across the Cape. So we all should be seeing honeybees soon. But I think the larger problem is, you know, the combination of the colony collapse disorder and using pesticides, mm-hmm. even spinosad, which is my go-to material. I don't use it on blooming plants.
Right. And the time of day.
And
maybe,
the time of day is a factor. Bees are foraging early in the morning. Generally, by late in the day, they're not. So, you know, you the materials you use, how you use them can impact pollinators. What you plant lots of blooming plants. You know, let your dill go to flower. Let your old parsley go to flower. These are any plants in the umbellifera family are great for pollinators. So
I let some of my broccoli go to flower. Yes. And it's a really pretty flower.
Yes, a nice bright yellow.
Yeah,
yes.
That's nice. We had a caller who wants to know what a nematode is.
A nematode is a little tiny microscopic worm. It's not an earthworm, but it's a worm-like creature that will penetrate insects, proliferate, and kill the insect. And it's been in use as a form of biological control, particularly for grubs in lawns, for a number of years now. But they're tricky to use properly. So if anything that requires a lot of work, I'm not going to do it.
I'm with you there.
I mean, I spread 5 yards of manure a couple of weeks ago, so that's enough work for me.
Janet is calling from I don't know where, right? Do we have Janet? Is there another call?
I'm calling from Orleans.
Oh, hi, Janet. Okay, Janet from Orleans. How are you?
Fine, thanks. And I always love hearing Roberta. So
oh, thank you.
To be able to check in. I have a patch of bearberry that was wonderful until this spring, and it's lots of brown and a few shoots of green. And I'm wondering if I'm going to need to prune it all back or if it's too old or what it might be going on with it.
Is it still in full sun, or over the years has it become more shaded?
It has a little more shade, but it still gets a fair amount of sun.
Yeah, they absolutely want full sun, no shade at all. So it might be somewhat weakened, even if it's only a little bit of shade. Where you see it growing best is out in the dunes in Provincetown, where it's on the sand in the full hot baking sun, and it's absolutely gorgeous. I would prune it back if you can maybe selectively prune some of the surrounding vegetation to allow more light in. I think that would benefit it.
That's great. That I appreciate the help.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Janet. 866-999-4626 is our toll-free number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. I bought two tomatoes so far because I grabbed that Sun Gold before they're gone, because you know that's a really popular little yellow tomatoes. But
you only need one.
Yeah, Sun Green.
Oh, I haven't heard of that one.
Yeah, so I had to get one of each because this is supposed to be the competition for the Sun Gold.
Oh, I will check that out.
So I thought I'm going to compare and see which one is actually the sweeter.
Well, I actually bought two tomatoes, too. I was with my sister in Rhode Island, and we went to this farm that was having one weekend of the year only open house, and I bought an heirloom that I've never heard of called San Francisco Fog.
Wow.
I had to buy it.
Yeah.
This one, the other one I have heard of, Aunt Ruby's Green, which I've never grown before. They're not in the ground yet, though. Yeah. They're protected.
What are your thoughts on hybrids versus heirlooms?
Well, hybrids, I don't have a problem with hybrids. Some people only will grow open pollinated plants. I like hybrids. They have hybrid vigor. They tend to be disease resistant. Many of them have been bred for specific qualities that we look for. On the other hand, I love heirlooms. I do think that they tend to have a really rich flavor that you don't necessarily get in a hybrid. They're not as productive, and they are more subject to disease problems. So I grow both.
Yeah, I do too. But the other thing too is if you decide you want to take some seeds and grow them next year, you're
not
gonna
from a hybrid.
From the heirloom, you can.
Yes,
but the hybrid,
can.
You don't know what you're going
to
get.
That's correct. It reverts back to whatever it was. You right. know, it's just it's a breeding issue.
Right. And of course, I'm about to pull all my dahlias out. I have put some in pots already. And
mine are in my basement. Yep. They're coming up today.
Mine are in the basement too. So just a quick reminder to folks who are planting their dahlias what we're looking for.
Dahlias want full sun. They like it when it's really, really warm. I think they're the queens of the August and September gardens.
Love them.
Every year I buy more dahlias and I say, what am I going to do? Because I don't have sun. However, you and I were talking about this. I had 8 20-foot tall Leyland cypresses taken down by Child's Arborist. They did a fabulous job. And now I have all this sun.
As you said, a new opportunity.
It's a new opportunity. Maybe that's where my dahlias will go.
I do the same thing. I have more dahlias than I know what to do with, but I keep buying more.
That's right.
Roberta Clark, horticulturist and entomologist who joins us once a month during the gardening season. So good to see you. See you next month.
I'm looking forward to it.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
Amy Vince produces The Point with assistance from Jenny Junker. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter. The Point is a production of the Cape and Islands NPR stations, a service of WGBH.